Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by Harris Caprock. Reliability never reached so far on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're proud to present this month's agency, DISA.
Welcome to the program. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest today is Brigadier General Brian Dravis. He's the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Welcome. So what is JIE?
Joint Information Environment is an initiative through the Department of Defense to take our existing status quo service-specific and service-traced information technology networks on the unclassified and classified sides and transition them into a singular standard joint information environment that universally meets the requirements and mission needs of all the four services and military departments and 40 different defense agencies. So we're moving out of the current, I'll call it ad hoc, construct of service-specific networks into that singular standard that provides better security, efficiency, and effectiveness for the Defense Department.
And what is your specific role?
So I'm the director of the JIE, Technical Synchronization Office, or JTSO, and my duties and tasks are spelled out within a management construct that was produced by the Defense Department last November. I have 20 specified tasks. I won't rattle them all off for you, but they run the gamut. But the essential idea is, for example, lead the development of Department of Defense technical specifications that will enable the Joint Information Environment to develop the DoD technical architectures and attributes and artifacts for the JIE and execute a myriad of JIE tasks, support technical input to things like business case analyses or analysis of alternatives and those kinds of things.
And you mentioned about the structure has sort of changed. Can you tell me a little bit more about how, you know, personnel changes, management structure has changed?
It's changed pretty significantly under the leadership of Lieutenant General Ronnie Hawkins. He's undertaken a few changes to precisely focus the agency towards his goal of transitioning the agency from its current construct, which has global responsibilities and across-the-board requirements and duties to all the four services in the department, to be better focused on the transition to the joint information environment. He's done that in a number of ways. Probably the first one I would mention is the recent creation of something called the DISA JIO office, which is led by senior executive Mr. David Stickley, who has been here for about 2 months. He brings over three decades of experience in information technology and communications. He's a retired Air Force officer. He and I go far back. He's exactly the right guy to take that task. And he has a couple of uniformed service members and a number of other civilians that work within DISA to deliver agency capabilities into the broader JIE enterprise. So he works with and through all of the other senior leadership within the agency to plan out, deliver, and help articulate what some of those capabilities are going to be and when they're going to be delivered. So that's sort of a first change. We also just recently retired Rear Admiral David Simpson. He was intimately involved and aggressively involved. Big loss, but we just gained Major General Glenn from the Army to take his place. Admiral Simpson was very engaged across all the services in setting the stage for JIE. And then a whole host of senior leaders within DISA have been very engaged. I'm a little reluctant to name names, but a few of them, Mr. Dave Mihalchik, Dr. Carter, Mr. Larry Huffman, gosh, Dave Bennett, I don't want to leave anybody out, Ms. Cindy Moran, Mr. Mark Orndorff, Lou Anne Overstreet in the testing and evaluation area. All of those folks are really getting their offices and organizations focused on meeting those JIE requirements, and that's all under General Hawkins' leadership.
What would you say are the key benefits of JIE to the services and their leaders?
It's a good question. There's a host of them. The Joint Information Environment is really intended to do three specific things for the Defense Department. First is better security, better effectiveness, and then better efficiency on the security side. It does it in a myriad of ways, really focused on this item that we call single security architecture. But on the security end, it will use identity-enabled data access, another area that we call IDAM, identity management, that gives you and your persona specific digital identity attributes as we evolve into the joint information environment. We'll make sure that not only anybody who uses their existing PKI-enabled common access card gets in, but there's further based attributes that define who you are, where you can go, what level of clearance you have, and what data will follow you once that joint information environment is fully established. The other thing the security side will do is better visibility through the network and better response to any sort of cyber attack. On the effectiveness end, it's going to allow for better command and control of the unclassified and classified networks, better access to data, and certainly more agile development of capabilities across the board. And then on the efficiency end, we're already undertaking measures to reduce the amount of IT infrastructure and the dollars associated therein, and it will robust the amount of enterprise services that are delivered and finally provide a strategic level of resourcing. So GIE's intended and will do all of those things for the Defense Department. Part of that change is we're collapsing down from approximately 2,000 data centers in the past and today down to approximately 800 that will be more secure, more resilient, more efficient, provide enhanced response to external and internal threats, and basically consolidate and standardize design architecture across the DoD and its networks. So that's in part what GIE will deliver to the department. Well, one of the things I didn't mention is that for combatant commanders, is the real benefit of the GIE is that it's going to allow those combatant commands to have real visibility, an opportunity to see down through the network so that any combatant commander will know with authority and confidence that both who and what is on those networks and be able to conduct humanitarian or combat operations in any region or even globally with confidence that the data and the information and the backbone is there reliably to support whatever operations they're involved with.
We'll take a short break now. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest is Brigadier General Brian Dravis. He's the Director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency.
In today's government environment, priorities change on a dime, so government customers need a telecommunications provider that can change at the same pace. Harris Caprock has plenty of bright ideas about how to make that happen. Ideas that enable agility. Ideas that ensure resiliency. Ideas that increase cost effectiveness. Harris Caprock tailors telecommunication solutions around customer needs, instead of forcing customers' requirements into standard service offerings. They've delivered telecommunications to more than 1,000 government locations in the U.S. Harris Caprock's extensive network connects 60-plus major Department of Defense locations with speeds up to 100G. Their capabilities extend even further around the world with a robust global backbone network spanning 23 countries. Harris Caprock specializes in engineering affordable solutions that provide rapid connectivity. To learn more, visit harriscaprock.com/brightideas. harriscaprock.com/brightideas.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest is Brigadier General Brian Dravis. He's the Director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Take me through the enterprise services. What does JIE have to offer?
Sure. Quite a bit, and we're growing and maturing that. I'd say almost daily. Probably the first area to look at, in addition to that security aspect that I talked about, is Defense Enterprise Email. Mr. Kai recently put out a memo that said all the services and department would transition to Defense Enterprise Email. The Army, in particular, has done that. We continue to provision and grow the number of accounts that are on DEE or Defense Enterprise Email. Basically, what that provides is better capability at lower cost. It's the U.S. Army's estimate that adoption of the DEE in FY12 is estimated to have saved them $76 million. And it provides any soldier, sailor, airman, marine, civilian a single email for their entire career, gives up to 4 gigabytes of storage, and a common department, a Defense Department-wide GAL or global access listing, so you can start to find people regardless of location, service, et cetera. That is, believe it or not, pretty profound for the Department of Defense. But there's quite a bit more. There's the Defense Enterprise Portal, and that's simply a SharePoint cloud-based collaboration tool to consolidate administrative hardware, software resources. And we're working on that in Europe now as part of Increment 1. We're also moving out on cloud computing, providing infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service capabilities as part of broader data center consolidation efforts and cloud computing efforts. DISA has a pretty significant mobile wireless pilot that is happening. They're streamlining the process to get those devices out in the field and approved through something called the STIGs, which is Security Technical Implementation Guides. For example, I've been provided an iPhone 5 as part of the pilot project. A number of other senior leadership within the DoD can now operate on tablets and Android or iPhone kind of devices. And they're growing and maturing a Department of Defense application store. So right now we have 16 approved applications, another 39 that are under review or being tested, another 44 on request. So that's burgeoning and growing and going through those processes to see fruition and fielding.
The first Enterprise Operations Center opened in July, I believe, in Germany. Tell me about this milestone and what it means.
Yeah, significant. It was the first approved, authorized, and recognized initial operating capability of the Joint Information Environment as part of the first increment that took place in support of European Command and Africa Command at Stuttgart Patch Barracks in Germany. And this was the result of an awful lot of work on the part of an awful lot of folks that were involved. It may not seem like a big deal or a significant event for a lot of folks that have been in active combat operations for 12 years to 20 years. I'm an airman, so talk to the Air Force guys. For more than two decades, we've been involved in combat operations. But getting that level of joint collaboration and cooperation, particularly in the IT world and communications world, is a paradigm shift. So today we have an Army colonel commanding the Enterprise Operations Center for those two combatant commands, working closely hand-in-hand, for example, with senior Air Force leadership at Ramstein, at RAF Molesworth in the UK, and RAF Alconbury in the UK, and the 624th Operations Center in San Antonio through the Air Force. So they have the same visibility and can see what the Air Force can see in terms of the status and reliability of those two Air Force installations in Europe. We're trying to grow and mature that capability and move it from its initial operating capability into a more mature, full operating capability. We've got some road left to travel to be able to do that, but I really credit all the folks involved building out what we call the TTPs, or techniques, tactics, and procedures, to actually operate a joint networked environment. And that is maturing daily as they exercise that and work it in concert with the other sister services.
You mentioned everyone working together, and I heard you talking about the integrated design teams in the other interview. If you could tell me a little bit more about how they're shaping.
Sure. Within the GIE, there's what we call the big rock areas, like a single security architecture, the IDAM, the identity management, NNT, or normalized network transport to the EOC, the Enterprise Operations Center, CDC, Core Data Center, etc. And part of what's been required is to develop the technical attributes and designs that go to support that singular Department of Defense standard. The way we do that is we pull representatives in from all the combatant commands, each respective service, many DoD agencies, and they partner and combine to form this integrated design team that will decide and design what those attributes look like and are needed to be fielded towards a GIE end state. There's a number of products that are needed to support that. In fact, 588 different engineering designs and attributes that have been worked on. We're making good progress on those. There's a process once we've brought the IDT, or integrated design team, together to produce and agree on those designs. And I can tell you it's no small feat to get that many different folks to agree together what it's going to take, for example, to provide a single security architecture against a single joint information environment that satisfies the Marines equally with the Air Force, with the Navy and Army, and so on. But we're getting there, and we're making good progress. And once that work is completed, it's handed over to the DoD CIO to go through yet another process of certification and approval.
As you implement new capabilities, how are you measuring their effectiveness?
Well, we're early on in the road. So, for example, we talked about the EOC, and how are we measuring? Well, it's probably more subjective than objective in the case of the EOC and that initial operating capability in Europe. Before the government shutdown occurred, we were on track to make a recommendation to the executive committee within the DoD to stand up and approve what was called Capability Upgrade 1, or declaration of the first core data center within Europe to support the GIE. Throughout the rest of calendar year 13, we'll continue to take those kind of steps in Europe to flesh out additional capabilities within the GIE that can then be measured and tracked. The next one, for example, would be the Internet access point. in Europe that supports those two combatant commands, and that will happen this year. And then we'll finally get to an installation processing node where we have that capability stood up. And again, each one of these successive bricks sort of served to provide an on-ramp into the broader GIE that eventually becomes this globally, I call it a continuum of enterprise-level services that each of the DoD entities can start pulling from and plugging into.
We'll take a short break now. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest is Brigadier General Brian Dravis. He's the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency.
In today's government environment, priorities change on a dime, so government customers need a telecommunications provider that can change at the same pace. Harris Caprock has plenty of bright ideas about how to make that happen. Ideas that enable agility. Ideas that ensure resiliency. Ideas that increase cost effectiveness. Harris Caprock tailors telecommunication solutions around customer needs, instead of forcing customers' requirements into standard service offerings. They've delivered telecommunications to more than 1,000 government locations in the U.S. Harris Caprock's extensive network connects 60-plus major Department of Defense locations with speeds up to 100G. Their capabilities extend even further around the world with a robust global backbone network spanning 23 countries. Harris Caprock specializes in engineering affordable solutions that provide rapid connectivity. To learn more, visit harriscaprock.com/brightideas. harriscaprock.com/brightideas.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest is Brigadier General Brian Dravis. He's the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency.
I know we talked about this a little bit, but how do you find the balance between creating capabilities that work for everyone and then making sure you accommodate each service's specific needs?
That's a great question. I think that may be the biggest challenge because, from my perspective, everybody's fully on board. They understand the imperatives involved and the urgency in getting out of the status quo environment and into a true joint information environment. And there's real enthusiasm for getting this online and going. The real challenge is managing the transition. In other words, each of the services and combatant commands have real missions that they've got to deliver daily across the globe. And how do we transition out of our current configuration into that joint information environment without disrupting operations or changing profoundly in a way that may not support operations that can't be accommodated within each of those theaters? So the transitional element, from my perspective, is one of the biggest challenges. As we work through those challenges, we sort of have to test a little, field a little, and transition a little. So we won't see a transition that says one day next year or 2 years from now, somebody throws a switch and says, voila, you've got the GIE. It's going to be a constant process of intelligent decisions that sort of help the department decide we can off-ramp this legacy equipment and capability to on-ramp the GIE capability in a series of on- and off-ramps that will eventually allow that transition and continuum to happen that will let the services maintain the capability and transition the capability from the as-is to the to-be. And as we go through that process, eventually Europe will get there first, and then the other theaters will follow, I think, in rapid succession, and each successive fielding and each successive theater will probably go a little easier and a little faster.
We also touched on this a few times, but what are all the ways you're receiving feedback, and what do you do with that information?
Pointedly, in some cases, which is fine. The official answer, I suppose, is there's an executive committee that works and meets every 2 weeks. And so that keeps everybody pretty energized and very engaged, and frankly, heavily enough tasked to stay on task. And there are other management elements within the department to help manage those management tasks, like the what's called the PCC or Planning Coordination Cell that is tri-chaired by a number of folks, or by three folks, and operates across the department, much like the JTSO operates across the department in and with DISA in particular, to deliver those capabilities. So the feedback comes pretty rapidly every 2 weeks. That's a bit of a compressed schedule to take the task, deliver in a two-week time frame, and then go back and keep doing that. That's the primary feedback loop. But part of what I do in addition is try to get to all the services and agencies and points of contact as rapidly and as often as I can. I'll admit I have fits and starts there based on battle rhythm and duty cycle and mission demands out of this office to be able to get to everybody. But I think it's a critical element of what the JTSO does in concert with this is to hear those service inputs and requirements and recognize those and make sure that what is being designed and what is being delivered meets the mission requirements and needs of every single entity within the Defense Department. And that may sound easy, but the Marines exist for a reason, like the Army exists for a reason, like the Navy does, like the Air Force does, like the Coast Guard does, like every agency does. And so it does get very complicated to make sure that a single security architecture, for example, is going to work in the deployed environment. For Air Force remote split operations of drones, what are called RPA, remotely piloted aircraft, equally well for the Marines in a tactical environment and equally well eventually for the Navy, both onshore and at sea, et cetera, et cetera. So we're just working through all those details.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
I will say that, you know, I think we're at an inflection point. I'm very optimistic that this is really on the precipice of real maturity and success. This is different. I had been assigned to the D.C. area previously in the past. I worked just within the Air Force chains on RPA, the drone program, back in 2005 at the height of the surge to field capability and get it out the door fast in support of the surge in Iraq in 2005. And that was a huge undertaking. And this really does dwarf that in scope, size, proportion, and shape across the entire Defense Department. So this is a pretty significant undertaking, but with all sincerity, everybody with whom I engage in every service and every agency understands without question the imperative of getting this out and getting it right. The other thing is that it's not a program of record, and so that, from my perspective, is adds to the challenge. And when I first got here 4 months ago, I kind of questioned that. I was a little dubious about why the department would go down that path, but I'm now very firmly convinced the department has got it exactly right and getting it right in its approach to maintaining it as an initiative so that the joint information environment will have the agility to respond. It's not just merely the fact that we have a huge number of threats out there in cyberspace, but it's the acceleration of the large number of threats. And your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with Moore's Law and those kind of traits and attributes of any kind of networked capability. Well, that's something we deal with. I think a traditional classic DoD acquisition program would just inhibit that and put the department continuously in lag against that measure of threat that we face. So I think the department's got it exactly right. And even though that makes certain aspects of this a little harder, I think it's the right thing.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank my guest, Brigadier General Brian Dravis, Director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. I'm Lauren Larson. You've been listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to the Agency of the Month, brought to you by Harris Caprock. Reliability never reached so far. On Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 10 AM, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. WFED, your source for federal news now.